Welcome back to Locked On Grizzlies. My name is Peter Edmiston, and I say back because we've had a little bit of a hiatus for the summer and, frankly, a personal hiatus for me to deal with some of the things that I needed to do away from the pod, but back with you here and excited to be back as we are now 2 weeks away. It's incredible to think, but as I record this, 2 weeks away from training camp, 2 weeks away from media day, from everyone reporting back, from all of the action starting to occur. Again, it's incredible how quickly it has gone. And to be honest, after a flurry of activity from the Grizzlies early in the summer and a few little punches here and there, for the most part, things have been relatively quiet and understated as this roster has more or less taken shape. And some questions about how those roster spots would be filled have been answered. Some questions about what the Grizzlies are going to do have been answered. There's one or two that are sitting kind of outstanding right now, but for the most part, it's all been squared away. The Grizzlies making some of the moves that we would have expected to kind of clean out the back end of their roster. But the front is still what it is, and you know that anything that happens this year from the Grizzlies is going to happen because of Mike Conley. It's just how it is. So Mike Conley's health is the most paramount thing, and I'm happy to report at this stage that everything looks good, everything sounds good, everything that you would want to see from a recovering Mike Conley has happened. Now, with the Grizzlies, you always have to take everything with a grain of salt. You have to be very cognizant of the worst-case scenario, which is a very real thing that can happen to the Grizzlies, but I can say, at least at this stage, that everything looks good. Training camp will tell. Time will tell. Camp, by the way, in Memphis, in case you're curious, and not anywhere else. It was kind of always the plan for the most part, unless something totally changed for it to be in Memphis, so not surprising there. But it'll be in Memphis at the FedEx Forum facilities. And then the preseason will get underway the second in Birmingham with that game against the Houston Rockets. So in any event, with all that being said, you got to wait and see with Mike Conley until some of that action starts to happen before you get too excited. But everything, he's playing pickup, he's playing 5-on-5, he's all the stuff that you would want to have happen from Mike is happening. And he is the guy, make no mistake about it, that is going to be the bellwether of success or failure. And frankly, I don't even know what success is going to be this year. That'll be something that we talk about over the coming weeks, because it is entirely possible that this Grizzlies team can simultaneously improve dramatically, but also find itself down in the bottom of the Western Conference. I mean, they could easily win between 35 and 40 games, which would be a 17-game improvement between, 13 and 18-game improvement on last year. And still not even be close to the playoffs. It's possible that it may take 48, 49, 50 wins to make the playoffs in the Western Conference. We've seen that before. I mean, there was a Grizzly team that won 50 games and had to wait until the final day of the season, essentially, or the day before, to clinch a playoff spot. That season saw a 48-win Phoenix team not make the playoffs. I think the West has the potential to be that good this year. And in that environment, a major Grizzly improvement still would not be enough to see them make the playoffs. That may end up being the fate of this team in even a bright scenario, in even a positive set of outcomes from individual players and improvement and that sort of thing. That may still end up being the situation, but you know, we'll kind of wait and see on that. That question, of course, is out there with Mike Conley. Marc Gasol, same kind of thing. If those guys aren't healthy, then everything else really doesn't matter when it comes to the Grizzlies. And Mark, after a summer of, well, he had his charity event with his brother in Barcelona, an event that Dylan Brooks was part of, an event that J.B. Bickerstaff was part of, a really nice charity function. And then from that point, he went and actually was part of a refugee saving operation, part of Proactiva Open Arms, a group that rescues refugees in the Mediterranean. Mark part of that. It was detailed on ESPN, and Gene Wojciechowski did a wonderful job of telling that story. An amazing piece of charity work from Mark. You would expect nothing less from a guy like him. He's a remarkable guy, and that is a remarkable story. You think about what he did, kind of put himself out there, didn't tell the Grizzlies, didn't tell anybody within the organization what he was going to do, and just did it. And in the process, ended up coming across a woman who was floating out in the Mediterranean. She was saved, a lady named Josephine from Cameroon, I believe. And she was saved by that boat that Mark was on and by that group that Mark was with. While a lot of other refugees were taken back by apparently a Libyan boat, it is not necessarily the best outcome for them, for this lady Josephine. It should be a good outcome for her. It's a story that's hard to tell, and it's a story that will be infuriating and angering about the state of this refugee crisis and what countries are doing to resolve it or not in that case. But what Mark is doing is incredibly notable, extremely brave, and just awesome. So thumbs up, kudos to Mark for that effort and for what he's done to do that. And I know the Grizzlies, I'm sure he didn't tell them, because I can't imagine they would have been real thrilled about it. But he's a grown man. Nothing in his contract prevents him from doing that. Listen, guy's saving lives, or trying to. I think that's a pretty cool deal. So well done to him. Now, from a basketball standpoint, Mark is in great shape. From my understanding, everything in terms of his off-season regimen has been solid. He continues to lean up. The diet that he's on now really is so much stuff that he's grown himself, raw vegetables. He loves that gazpacho that he makes, cold soup. Not my thing, but he's a big fan. A lot of really fresh, lean stuff, very little junk. The guy eats great. So you've noticed that his body has changed dramatically over the years, and that should help him. That's helped him with the recovery from the foot injury. It's helped him to get himself back and keep himself in shape, keep himself physically fit. He's going to have to be, because he's going to turn 34 in January of this upcoming season. It's not an age for big men that typically you see them getting better, especially big men that have dealt with injury. Mark is also intriguing because he is in the technically could be in the final year of his deal. He's got one more year after this, but it's a player option. And so that may be something that comes up over the course of the season. I don't know that it would necessarily be a distraction per se, but it is something that is going to have to be discussed if Mark decides to opt out. I would guess it would happen because he would sign another deal with the Grizzlies that would kind of finish out his career. I don't get a great sense that Mark is itching to go anywhere else or that he wants to uproot at this stage of his life. The guy is well entrenched in the city of Memphis. The guy is well entrenched with his family in Memphis, his kids. He's grown up here in a big chunk of his high school age, throughout that adolescent period, and then into his professional career. So much of it has been spent in Memphis. I don't get the sense that he wants to go. I think he's a Memphian through and through. I guess there are circumstances that could see him leave, or even more unlikely, or be traded, but I don't think it's something that he wants. And I think he made that clear when he was probably even less satisfied with the organization as a free agent, and didn't even so much as take a meeting or talk to anybody else before re-signing with the Grizzlies. So it's not something that he has a lot of appetite for, I don't think. But considering it is technically the opportunity exists for this to be the last year of his deal, that is something that will probably come up. I'm sure I'll ask him about it. I'm sure others will ask him about it as well. And we'll kind of get a feel for where he's at on that contract, and if the Grizzlies want him to opt out so that they could facilitate that longer-term deal. That remains to be seen. We'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about some of the younger players in the back end of the roster too here on Locked On Grizzlies. Back with you here on Locked On Grizzlies, and it is really an off season of some changes and some churn along the roster from a lot of guys that just weren't getting it done and just didn't have a future. And we've kind of outlined over the last couple of years a lot of them, and those guys have been moved on. We talked at the time of the signing with Kyle Anderson what that would do to the style of play. But what it also kind of necessitates is a higher IQ group, just in general. Something that they wanted to surround Jaren Jackson Jr. with, a bunch of high IQ players, high basketball IQ, get a little more smarts out there. Well, to do that, you got to get rid of the guys that weren't pulling their weight in that department. And that's where the trade involving Ben McLemore and Deontay Davis for Garrett Temple, that trade was in large part a basketball IQ trade. No knock on Ben McLemore, very nice guy. Same thing with Deontay Davis, but those guys did not have a lot of basketball IQ. Those guys were not making good decisions out there. Ben McLemore, the 360 dunk, it will go down in infamy. One of the most brain dead maneuvers that I can ever remember. So that's what we're dealing with, you know. Deontay Davis never happened. So much potential. So disappointed, man. Just never got going. Was always just sort of moping around, very poor body language. Never had that extra little oomph. Never got that thing that you wanted. Oh, finally that game where it's like, oh, okay, this guy gets it. Just never had it. Never had it. And probably his most promising moments were in his rookie year when he would show flashes of that athleticism and that like weak side shot block. And you think, okay, wait a second, this guy, maybe he can be a rim runner. Maybe he can do all those things we thought he could do. No, he couldn't. And so you get those guys off the roster. The McLemore signing was just an utter disaster in hindsight. But you bring in Garrett Temple, and Temple's not the greatest player per se. But if you look at the guy's story and where he's come from and what he's gone through to get to this point in his career, you know, he's played for 11 different teams. If you throw in the D/G League and internationally, and I mean, the guy is the third. He's got the third most 10-day contracts in NBA history. I mean, he has gone through some stuff. He has crawled through the mud to get into the sun, and now he's there. And all of those experiences, that character that's built through time and energy and just continuing to have to fight and claw and scratch, that stuff helps so much to give you perspective. And he's a smart guy on top of that. I mean, he's a high basketball IQ player, but he's just a high IQ guy. He's a smart guy. That's really important for this team. They need smart guys. They want to surround Jaren Jackson, who's a bright, very enthusiastic. The guy's like a puppy. He's just wide-eyed. He's super energetic. And you want him to be surrounded by good folks. And Garrett Temple fills that role. Now, on the court, Temple will fill a role of being a versatile, solid, switchable wing who can, you know, kind of hold down the fort, do okay in terms of shooting, do okay defensively, be a good option out there. I don't know that he's going to end up, you know, being a starter or coming off the bench. I think the questions are interesting about the Grizzlies shooting guard, who's actually going to kind of emerge from that position. That's something we'll talk about later on in coming pods. But for now, at least, I can tell you that Temple provides an option that they just haven't had before, and it's nice to see. Grizzlies also using Jarrell Martin as a chip to kind of lower a little bit of the roster burden from a salary standpoint. They're not necessarily, you know, they're not going to pay tax. Like, they're not going to be a tax-paying team. So anytime they're even flirting with it, even getting up, then they're pretty close. This was a move they need to make in order to save about $1.5 million. They did that in moving Jarrell Martin for Dakari Johnson, who has since been waived. There was some thought that maybe Johnson would stick around as kind of a backup, true backup center, because in trading Deontay Davis, there really isn't a true backup center, quote unquote. But at that position around the league, if you look, it just not, that's not a position that's really out there much. you know, there's not a lot of teams that have two true fives that are unable to be anything else. And, you know, that's kind of what you would have if you'd kept Dakari Johnson. So the Grizzlies would expect that much of that backup five time will end up being played by Jaren Jackson Jr., which makes sense. That's the way he should be. I think ultimately he's a five in the long term in an ideal situation. I think some lineups that he throw out there with him at the five, with a guy like a Chandler Parsons at the four, with Kyle Anderson out there potentially playing some four as a playmaker, those open up a lot of scoring and ball movement type lineups that would be a lot of fun to watch. I don't know physically if he can handle being a five, especially against some of the bigger, more physical teams. That's what kind of remains to be seen with Jaren Jackson, but I like that the Grizzlies have made these moves to open up that opportunity for him to do that. And again, Jarrell Martin, a guy that it wasn't going to happen for. There's no reason to keep him around at this point. Not a bad guy, again, but not a high IQ player and not a player that really had a role on the team. He didn't turn into a stretch four that they were hoping for. He was more he had some moments on the interior. He had some moments shooting the ball. He had some moments in space, but nothing ever really came together as a full package for Jarrell Martin in any given time. So that made him very expendable, and you see what happened at the back end of the roster. So now it's at least – now if you look kind of how the flow of the roster, how it looks, to me, finally – in the offseason, you saw a team that started to make moves that all seemed like they were on the same page and all kind of made sense. You know, we haven't always seen that with the Grizzlies. We haven't always seen a logical flow of A to B to C. This, I think, you have a pretty logical flow for this offseason. The signings, the drafting of Jaren Jackson, the signing drafting of Javon Carter, signing Kyle Anderson as your big free agent move. All moves, well, Javon Carter wasn't necessarily my favorite pick at that position, but the other moves, enthusiastic fan of. And the reason I was a fan of them is because it shows you that you have a style that you're trying to work towards, and all these moves that you've made, you're working towards a player movement style, defensive-oriented, with high IQ player and ball movement that will be punctuated by, hopefully, if things go well, improved shooting, perhaps from, you know, the front court, but improved threat of three-pointers and some opportunities for some very long, stretchy lineups. I mean, it's not an ideal roster if you're not talking about a championship contender or anything like that, but you can at least see the thought process. It all makes sense, which is more than you could say for some of the Grizzlies moves, where you'd see some good moves and then they'd sign Ben McLemore to a 2-year, you know, $11 million deal, and you're like, what the hell was that? You do one thing well and the next thing not so much. Since we've talked about them kind of doing things in concert and those things making sense, as we continue to get closer to media day and to preseason and training camp and all that sort of thing, we'll kind of see how it all shakes out. But you can at least see the beginnings of something starting to happen. And if they can get these long lineups and get a little bit of shooting, I think a lot of pressure is going to be on Mike Conley early on. And they're going to have to find some people to emerge at the shooting guard spot. But there is at least the possibility here of something that can be their own style, that can incorporate some elements of the old school defensive-oriented group while also bringing in enough offense to be competitive in today's NBA. And that's where you have to have that middle ground. You have to walk that line, so to speak. You got to walk that fine line and be able to do that. If you look historically, and I've written about this for the paper, if you historically can just be okay offensively and be top 10 defensively, you're going to typically make the playoffs. But okay means you got to get to around the 15 mark. And being top 10 defensively again, these are all things that are easier said than done in an extremely brutal Western Conference. So we shall see. And we'll talk more about it extensively, in specifically as we get closer and closer to training camp. Also, wanted to mention, too, in this first pod back, the Grizzlies have realigned, I guess, or reorganized their front office. And I don't think this is a huge deal, but it's interesting nonetheless. I think the biggest bit of news is to see, you know, Zach Klayman move up and to be assistant GM and kind of take care of some of the more legal side of things. He's the legal counsel as well. He's moved up. And as he's moved up, you've seen Chris Wallace solidify his power as GM. John Hollinger solidify his power as executive vice president of basketball operations. Tayshaun Prince kind of moves up the ranks a little bit. Chris Makris moves up the ranks a little bit. Those guys will take over the duties that Ed Stefanski left when he left to go to Detroit. So they're not going to directly replace Ed's role. I forget Ed was president of some, I forget the whole alignment, but Ed, anyway, Ed's duties will be done by those guys, which Ed was, you know, mostly in the relationship business, which is important, but not irreplaceable. But the biggest thing is what really wasn't talked about in that group, and what wasn't really talked about in that press release the Grizzlies sent out, was Joe Abadi, still named the director. That's still his title. He still is technically overseeing all this stuff and kind of the liaison through Robert Parra, but I'm told that has kind of diminished, that his status and his grouping and what he did, his involvement on a day-to-day basis has been pretty severely limited and diminished over time, to the point where, you know, he's really not heavily involved as he had been over the last few seasons. I think the idea was always to kind of walk through and be Robert Parra's eyes and ears and kind of ease him into things, especially after what happened with Jason Levy, and he was trying to find somebody that he could trust and deal with. And but it was always going to be kind of a temporary thing. And so that temporary time appears to have come to an end. And I think Parra maybe feels more confident. I can't speak for him, but I think this means that Chris Wallace has more direct power, which I think, you know, whether you like it or not, whether you like Chris or not, at least Chris is a basketball guy and he understands basketball and he's making basketball decisions. You know, if you have non-basketball people making basketball decisions, that's never good for anybody. You can quibble about some of the decisions specifically, but at least it's a basketball guy in charge. And I think the involvement from outside is lessened. That's good. That's always good news. And I think it's no coincidence that the Grizzlies have had the most logical offseason that they've had in some time as a result of that. So just keep an eye on that. But since this buy-sell situation has resolved and Robert Parra is now the majority owner and the controlling owner, taking care of the stakes and the winning that little battle between he and Kaplan and Strauss and the whole deal, he's now much more in control. I think that has kind of led to some of this as well. So how that affects the season on the court, I don't know that it will a whole lot, but I do think it has affected the decision-making and the flow of the offseason. I think it's made a lot more sense for a lot more people, which is exactly what you would want to see if you are a Grizzly fan. So keep an eye on it, but it's, I think, good news all the way around. Thank you, as always, for listening to Locked On Grizzlies, part of the Locked On Podcast Network that is thriving and growing and doing fantastic work, not just in the NBA, but college sports as well now. And, of course, NFL going crazy, Major League Baseball. It's really an incredible network to be a part of. So thank you so much for listening and for being part of it. My name is Peter Edmiston. Thank you for listening again, and looking forward to coming back with you with lots more as the season is almost upon us here on Locked On Grizzlies.